Hello, and welcome to this iSoccer podcast. Hi, we have Vin Yang here today. I'm super thrilled that you are joining us. He is our keynote speaker for our iSoccer conference, Europe. He is an entrepreneur, magician, and my favorite thing, he is a communications expert, which I think is fantastic. Everyone needs it, as he has well said. Welcome, Vin. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I love that the communication part was your favorite part, not the magician part. That's actually quite offensive, but that's fine. Great to meet you, Lizzie.
I'm so sorry.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. In Australia, we call that taking the piss. So just taking the piss. Just having a quick joke with you, that's all. But I can't believe you thought I was actually being serious.
For a second, I was like, oh no, I just my biggest faux pas on a podcast.
My goodness. No, it looks really good to be here. Really excited to have a chat with you and thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you. I have to say that I have been cyber stalking you aggressively. You're welcome. I mean, you don't get that very often. Girls don't admit that very often, so you know.
Aggressive part. I thought that's funny.
Well, I'm fascinated. You have a fascinating story from your background, your childhood, your parents from Vietnam, the adversity you faced, shy, the start of your career to the change of your career, how you kind of grew into where you're at. I'm beyond. It's an amazing story, which I'm thrilled to be able to kind of tell a little bit here. But one of the things I thought would be really a good place to start is if you could give me a little bit of what your perspective of going through that was. Obviously, I can read it in black and white, but I would love to hear like how it from a first person experience, what it was like for you through that.
From what you've just mentioned, the most powerful story was my mom and dad leaving Vietnam. So my dad actually became a fisherman for 6 months in Vietnam so that he could learn the patrol route of the Viet Cong. So he became a fisherman to learn the patrol route, and then he needed to know which night did they not patrol so they could escape Vietnam. And then he realized that the only nights they don't patrol was when it was the stormy nights. So the nights that you probably die. So then he realized, I mean, and it was crazy because my dad didn't see that as a scary thing. He saw that as an opportunity. He saw that, well, this is how we can get out. This is how we can find freedom. And on the stormiest night, they left, you know, on the ocean for months. And in the end, they were saved by an oil rig. So there was a New Zealander captain on this oil rig out in the ocean. And he came down and he said, oh, look, we've got to destroy your boat. It's ocean law. We can't save you unless you're dying. My dad thought, crap, we've met the white pirates. And they actually saved my parents. Because, you know, the language miscommunication, they couldn't understand. Right. And then they broke the boat, sunk the boat, saved my parents, and then took them to a refugee island. And then Australia took us in.
Wow.
So I got to skip all of that. And then I was born in Australia. However, my parents have told me this story many times. And to me, when I think about it, I'm just so grateful. So I think with all the adversity that they've been through, then, you know, we've been through the lack of financial means and et cetera, that's just made me extremely grateful. And it's also given me a higher risk tolerance. And I think as a result of that, when I look at certain risks, some people look at it, wow, you've taken so many risks in your life. I don't really think of it as that because I always have that context of going, well, not really. Didn't get onto a boat during a stormy night trying to leave a country with communist rule. So to me, it's given me I just look at life in a different way because of the context that I've been given. The story is I left accounting, I left commerce and law. I left my degree with 6 months to go to pursue becoming a magician, you know, no longer fulfilling the Asian prophecy. So it kind of seems ridiculous. Someone would look at that and go, that's crazy. But to me, I don't. I think that's a worthwhile risk. You know, because you're pursuing not just financial security, but you're trying to pursue happiness and fulfillment.
Hearing it from your side is a completely different perspective from reading it, in, like I said, in black and white. Thank you for sharing that with me. I appreciate that.
That's okay.
My next question actually is what was the first experience in your life when you realized you had the power to do something really meaningful?
Ooh, This is slightly cheesy, so I hope you're not lactose intolerant. But to me, I feel like the moment for me was, it had to do with magic. And I remember this one moment where I performed my first piece of magic and just the reactions around me, you know, the joy that people felt and the astonishment and the amazement. These are kind of expressions and experiences we don't experience every day. You know, we don't experience astonishment and amazement. And when I was able to do that, I thought, wow, me, I could do that? That's amazing. This is so cool. And then I got addicted to that. So that was kind of that first moment where I realized we could actually impact others in such a profound way. Whereas normally our interactions with people during the day are just kind of, hey, how you going, mate? Oh, good. How are you? You know, it's not out there. It's not like an explosive reaction. Whereas the moment I did magic, I went, wow, we actually have the capacity to impact people dramatically. You know, I think that would be the first moment I kind of realized, as human beings, we can impact each other intensely.
Wow.
So yeah, that was the moment.
No, that's actually, as being somebody that is non-magically inclined, I take it from an entertainment perspective. So hearing you explain it that way, that the possibilities are endless, that your imagination can expand you, not only just in your enjoyment, but in your life. Like I found that a very interesting theme in the things that I was learning about you.
Well, you know what's really interesting, right? If we just kind of link that to communication and words for a moment, one of the coolest things about magic is that it made me, I mean, when you first learn magic, you think about, oh, you learn about it from books where they say, oh, there used to be wizards and they would put spells on people. And you look at that and you go, oh, that's nonsense. That's not real. But then you kind of realize it is. And there's one situation I remember, one of my cousins, she was getting ready to go out one evening and she spent hours getting ready and she looked beautiful. And then she went out and then one of her friends said, oh, are you okay? You look so tired. And I just saw the confidence just completely drain from her. And she went from feeling beautiful to feeling ugly that evening. And I went, and then it just made me think, wow, magic spells are real. You know, and it's not just magicians or wizards, if they ever existed, but it's not just magicians or wizards that have the power to be able to put spells on people. We all have the power to be able to put spells on each other with the words that we use and how we say what we say. And then that's when I made the realization that, wow, magic does have a profound impact on people and the magic of words. So in that sense, we're all kind of magicians and we've just got to be so careful because our words can lift people while words can really destroy people.
That is very true. That's very true. I watched your mini documentary series that you had on your website.
Cool.
And yeah. I have to say, I there were parts of it. I mean, hope you're not lactose intolerant because this is going to be cheesy. There were parts I cried. Oh no. Well, then I take it back.
No, I'm kidding.
Reverse.
No, thank you.
No, I did because there were things that you mentioned in there that touched me, that made sense to me. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head by saying that, fear is something that it's not unique. It's not individual. It's across the board. And the skill that we're not taught is communication. So I find it fascinating, but I would love to hear, how do you tie magic in with your communication and teaching that to students?
Well, I mean, I learned it through my own journey. As a magician, I was taught this, and I was taught this in tertiary education. I was taught this in high school. I was taught this in the world of magic in my particular industry, that the better you get technically, the more successful you'll become. And then as a result of that, I spent thousands of hours, and I kid you not, thousands of hours in my bedroom by myself in front of a mirror practicing magic. It seems kind of egotistical, but I spent all that time just in the mirror going, wow, that was good. But then I had the brilliance, but it was invisible to the rest of the world because I was losing out gigs to a local magician. His name was Magic Mike, and definitely wasn't sexy like Magic Mike, but I was losing gigs out to this guy and I couldn't understand why. And it drove me insane. And in the end, I realized it was because I've kind of been led down the wrong path, is that just technical skills alone is not going to help you become successful. There's another ingredient in the world of magic, and we call it showmanship. And showmanship is just a fancy word for communication skills. If you're technically brilliant and you're 10 out of 10, just absolutely brilliant, technically 10 out of 10, but if your communication skills is 3 out of 10, do you think people perceive you to be 10 out of 10 or 3 out of 10? And the reality for me at the time was I was only as good as I was able to communicate. So even though technically, again, I'd spent thousands of hours and become great, I was only able to communicate a 3 out of 10 level of brilliance. And again, just to kind of give this story a little bit of consistency, Magic Mike, he was maybe technically a 5 out of 10, but he was able to communicate at a 10 out of 10. So therefore, I lost out all the gigs to him. Mm. That's when I realized in my own journey in the world of magic that you need to become great with showmanship. The same goes for the world of magic, same goes for the world of professionals. That's how I kind of bring the two worlds together. It's kind of from that common beginning, that common story that I have. And then from there, I build it into the world of professionals.
So you are a self-proclaimed shy child. That's how you've explained yourself as being a little bit more on the shy side, little less quiet. So how did you grow into this showman that I see on the stage now and can command an audience of thousands of people? How did you develop that?
I had to break the mold. So I'll give the audience a bit of context. When I was about 12 years old, I remember this one story very specifically. I really fancied this girl named Stacy. And I remember my best friend Lenny at the time, he was the jock in the school, you know, fit, and he was an athlete, and he had a reversible Adidas jacket. And when girls got cold, he took it off, reversed it, and gave it to him, and they thought he was so cute. And I was so jealous of him. And I remember asking Lenny, I go, Lenny, how do I get a girlfriend? And I remember him giving me advice, and he said, oh, it's easy, man. Just be funny. And I thought, okay, yep. So I remember going home, and at the time Yahoo was the big thing. So I searched on Yahoo for jokes, and I found this joke. I thought it was hilarious. The next moment in school, I remember there's this nice pause in class, and Stacy was there, and it was quiet, and she was beautiful. And I turned around at Stacy, and I looked at her, and I said, did you know that the first French fry was not cooked in Greece? It was cooked in France. Right. And then, you know, it wasn't funny. She didn't laugh. But worse. Yeah, thank you for laughing. But when she
it was, yeah.
No, that's okay. I just wish she laughed. And then I remember she flicked her hair around and her beautiful blonde hair kind of just fluttered. And then she looked me dead in the eye and she said, you're not funny. Stop trying to be like Lenny. And I remember it crushed my soul, actually.
I'm crushed.
Yeah, thank you for being crushed for me. But it was just so traumatizing. And I realized in that moment that my school, my class, they had a mold for the 12-year-old Vin. There was a mold for me. And the mold was that I was the quiet, shy, not funny, not out there kid. And then I started to learn about 12 years old that, people have a mold for me, how I should be. And I actually moved schools. And I moved schools a total of 5 times. We can get into that another time if you want to. But then I went to a new school. And at this new school, I realized that, hang on, there's no mold for me because the kids had no preconceived ideas of who I was. And I was so sick of being bullied. And I thought, you know, damn it, I'm going to try to be the bully. But that didn't work out. The bullies quickly worked out that I wasn't. However, for a day or so, they thought I was. And that, in my own head, made me realize that there's a power to this. And then I moved schools again. And at this next school, I thought, you know what? I really enjoy entrepreneurship. I want to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to break the mold and become the entrepreneurial version of Vin. And then I kind of grew into the person that you see today. And to me, the whole idea behind the story and the reason why I'm sharing it is because there was a mold. There was a mold for me. And it took me going to a whole new school where people didn't have any preconceived ideas of who I was for me to be able to break out of that mold. And I find that a lot of my students, when they come to my classes in person or virtually or however, is that they have a mold. And there's a mold that they feel trapped in. And sometimes what we find is it's not really the people around them trapping them inside that mold. It's them trapping them inside that mold. They're trapping themselves. And to me, I had to break out of that mold, give myself permission to not be so attached to who I was in the present and give the future version of myself a chance. And it wasn't until that moment. And my name's not actually Vin, if you know that. My name, if you did stalking hard enough, you'd know. But judging by your face, you don't.
My name's
not actually Vin. Yeah, my birth name was Quan. And I was so sick of who Quan had become that when I was 15, I asked my parents permission for me to legally change my name. So I could truly, in that sense, break the mold and become a completely different version of myself. Because I was so unhappy with that other version. I was so quiet, never spoke up, never got attention. I got really sick and tired of that version. So I changed my name. So Vin was an evolution. It's like an evolved Pokemon, if you would. Yeah.
Well, I think Vin is a way cooler name than a Pokemon name, just so you know. I actually really like
it. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. But where did Vin come from? Why did you decide that name?
My dad and his brothers had an Asian grocery store.
Oh.
And it was called Vin Fat. And not Vin Fat as in I was obese, but Vin Fat is grocery in Asian culture. So I don't know why. I just like, oh yeah, I'll name myself after a grocery store. Didn't have very high hopes, I think. Wasn't aiming at the stars or anything. Just went, oh, I'll just go for something mediocre.
Well, look who's not mediocre now. So
Still am in ways, but thank you.
Well, you know, I haven't seen any yet, so I'm very impressed. But I have to say that I have a lot of empathy for your story because I often find that I can feel myself trapped in the story that I tell myself or that I've been telling myself. And that I need to, sometimes I got to shake it loose. And I've done some drastic things in just picking up and moving across the country and not knowing anybody. I can say that it changed me. Like it made me step outside. And I think that's actually fascinating because I've never pinpointed what you said by saying like, you got to step outside of the mold. You got to break your own mold to be the next version of yourself.
And part of the ingredient for that, part of the ingredient is what you did. Sometimes you put yourself in a new environment where people have no preconceived ideas of who you are. They have no stories about you. That gives you a fresh start.
Yeah, that's really powerful because I've never thought of it like that until you just said what you did, where it's, you know, it's, we do tend to have this, I don't even know what the percentage is, but there's only like a very small percentage of this world that are actually living their passion, living their dream, right? And it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that and that breaking that mold like you talk about and being able to, you know, your masterclass, your keynote speeches, any of your pieces that you talk about this, I think is brilliant because I don't think people look at it as something so simple.
Yeah.
And how did you break it down to be something, you know, where you could teach this and you could help people be inspired and motivated by this?
Yeah, it took a long time to formulate it because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to make sure that the proof was in the pudding, right? I wanted to make sure that, okay, look, sure, I could teach you this, but I need to be able to do it first. And to me, the top of the mountain of communication skills, if you would, is becoming a keynote speaker. Is it possible to become a keynote speaker and speak and be and use the very skills I want to teach to be able to climb the ladders of that world? And that to me was the first goal I had. I go, you know what? If I want to teach this in 5 years, 10 years, well, let's climb this mountain first before I take others up there. You know, if you climb Mount Everest, you want to make sure your guide's been up there a few times. But to me, I just wanted to make sure that I could do this. And because I suffer from imposter syndrome, because I just recently got to, earlier this week, I worked with Zoom. And then I just get that imposter like, oh, damn it, who am I? They're going to work out that I'm just a fraud. And so for me to get through that imposter syndrome, I just have to climb the mountain. Because once I climb it, I go, yes, damn it, I am worthy. But when I don't climb the mountain, I just don't feel worthy. I just go, oh, no. They're going to work out. I grew up in the northern suburbs in South Australia, you know, and yeah. So it's just it's my way of battling with that.
No, that makes sense. Actually, that leads me to my next question, where, you know, you took this giant leap. You could have led, I don't want to call it a mediocre life, but you could have assumed the life as an accountant, or, you know, as a lawyer, as a doctor, whatever, you know, the path might be, but you decided to go off the unbeaten path and take this big, these big risks. Can you kind of remember like your first win or your success that made you feel confident that what the decision that you made was the right one for you? I mean, do you have an example of that?
Yeah, I do. And I love what you said before as well, Lucy. You mentioned that our stories form the beliefs about what's possible for us, the stories that we have. And often I think the reason why people don't pursue a certain path is because they have potentially one story that they keep replaying over and over and over and over again. The classic one is public speaking, and then I'll get into that moment. But the public speaking one is, oh, I went up and I did a presentation in front of my class when I was young. I didn't prepare, didn't know how to prepare, didn't know how to use my voice, didn't know how to put a presentation together, therefore put a terrible presentation together. And then the teacher just grilled you for it, or you got a bad mark. Then people rarely seek out those opportunities to speak anymore because they're still replaying that story. So to me, as an entrepreneur, I had terrible stories as well, but then I kept trying to give an opportunity for a great story to happen. And the one great story I remember happening was, as a professional magician, I didn't know you could make money as a professional magician. And at the time, my parents were pursuing, like telling me, oh, you've got to become an accountant. This is the way to get security in life. And then I remember going, well, what is security, mom and dad? And they go, oh, it's money. And I go, oh, okay, well, how much money is security? And they said to me, oh, an accountant can make $1,500 a week. And I went, oh, okay, so that's security. I didn't have context. And then I remember the first win I had was when a client of mine in South Australia booked me. I was about 21, and it was a networking function. And then he said, oh, Vin, we want to get a magician in to be somewhat of a social lubricant and get everyone mingling. I go, okay, cool. And he goes, well, how much do you charge for 3 hours, Vin? And I said, $1,500. And I just said it without batting an eyelid. And then he goes, oh, great. Well, send me the invoice and we can't wait to have you this Saturday. And I went, and when I remember the moment I hung up the call, because there was no video conferencing, I went, what the hell? He was going to pay me a whole, I could make what an accountant made in a week in 3 hours. And that story, that moment opened my mind. And again, please, this is not looking down on any other profession.
No.
My accountant.
Story. Yes.
I'm so grateful for my accountant. He's so brilliant at what he does and he loves what he does. And I'm like, yes, thank you that you love that craft. It's just not for me. And then
I get it.
That was a story that opened my mind up to the possibility of what was possible. And I remember taking home, you know, they gave me a check. I went home, I cashed it, took $1,500 cash in $50 notes, so it looked like a bit more. And I remember putting it in front of my dad and then just sliding it to him going, made that in 3 hours, Dad. And you know, money, it talks to my dad profoundly. And my dad was like, what, you, huh? And it just blew his mind. And from that moment, I opened his mind as well.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah. And it's interesting that you said that, because it's, really, I mean, it goes with anything. You really don't know until you try, right?
Yeah.
So how did you as you had said, that we all have fears and they're not too different from each other. How did you, you must have had a fear. You must have been afraid. I mean, our ego talks. We might fail, you know, what if we're not good enough? Like you said, how did you overcome that?
Well, I mean, during the keynote, I'm going to show a video of me from about 7 years ago. And 7 years ago, you'll see a version of me. You won't believe it's me. You know, you'll think I remade the situation in today's world, but it's truly a video of me from 7 years ago. One of the things I feared most was public speaking. I mean, I teach it now and it feels cool to be able to do so, but I used to fear that. I remember winning an award. I won an award, Young Entrepreneur of the Year in South Australia. And when they presented me the award, they said, oh, Vin, we'd love you to come up. It was one of the worst speeches I think anyone's ever given. It was just, I didn't know what to do. All I know how to do magic, but I didn't know how to just go up on stage and talk. And they said, Vin, we want a 15-minute speech from you. And I went, 15 minutes?
Wow.
This is insane.
That's a lot.
And then when I did it, they regretted giving me those 15 minutes.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. It's just, I feared it. And this is not a sexy answer. It's not an exciting answer. It's somewhat of a boring answer. But to me, it was just the gradual process of showing up again and again and again and again. And to me, the second time I did it wasn't as scary as the first time. And then the third time I did it, scarier than the first time, some reason, it got weird. But then gradually, as I just continually approached it, and when you look at fear, when you, okay, here's something I can relate to, and hopefully you and the listeners can relate to. In a scary movie, when you watch a horror movie, we're watching a horror movie the other night, when you're watching a horror movie and the main star of the movie is running away from the monster, you get scared, the person gets scared in the movie, everyone just gets super scared, and you feel the fear when they're running away. But when the main character of the movie turns around and faces the monster loses power. It's always the case. And that's a little bit of insight into fear itself. The fears that you currently have, the more you run away from it, the more I avoided the public speaking, the more it crippled me. But the moment I faced the fear, it started to lose power. And I think that's what you've got to realize, is that the monsters that you have, the fears that you have, the moment you look at them, they lose their power. They get smaller and you get bigger. And that's what I would say is that, I mean, I'll give you another fear that I've faced recently was stand-up comedy. I'm really scared of getting on stage in front of people who are expecting you to be funny. As a speaker, it's lovely because you can just, you know, they don't expect you to be funny, but when you're funny, they're like, oh, that was funny. And whereas when you're sitting in front of an audience, that's like, make me laugh. Freaks me out.
Yeah.
So I did it. And yes, freaked the crap out of me. I was worst 5 minutes ever on stage. So afraid. Sure, I've been in front of thousands of people, 40,000 people, right? But getting in a room full of eight people, that scared the crap out of me. But once I've done it 8 times now, not as scared anymore. That monster is now very small. That's what I would say on that. Sorry, I went on a big rant.
No, that was actually great because No, it was wonderful because something that you said it's not a very exciting answer, but it's just practice. You get up, you do it again, get up the next day, you do it again, and you keep facing it, which, you know, makes me want to ask you what you do. You put a lot of emotion, a lot of physical energy, a lot of mental energy in what you do and what you give people. I mean, that it takes a lot out of you, I would imagine, which is, you know, can be draining, but to keep you always at your highest self, your best self, are there any like daily practices or rituals, routines that you do in order to constantly like keep yourself motivated, keep yourself facing those fears so those monsters stay little?
Look, I think you've just got to know what it is that you want. I feel like the lack of motivation that many of us feel, I feel too, I'm human, and the lack of motivation comes from a lack of clarity. Because this is my day, when I know exactly what I need to do today, there's generally a lot of motivation because there's no, oh, I don't know what to do next. Oh, what should I do? Oh, should I do this or should I do that? No, then you just got to do this. So to me, clarity is a core component of motivation and inspiration. So that's one thing I'd say. Try to seek clarity. And the more clarity you have, the more motivated you will feel. The second thing for me is, I've just got to make sure that I adopt the mindset of generosity. Now, generosity, when we think about it, we tend to think about it in terms of money. So that's the first one we go to. And then those of us that think deeper, we go, oh, time. We want to be generous with our time as well. But the third area of generosity that people generally don't think about is your communication skills. And I know it sounds weird, but I'll explain. But it's generosity with your energy. Because Lucy, you're giving such great energy right now, and I hope you think I am as well.
Oh, yes.
But imagine, we could very easily jump on this podcast and, hey, Lucy, how are you going? It's great to be here today.
Yes.
And I could give you a very... So to me, the conscious decision that I'm making on a daily basis is that I'm going to give those around me energy. I'm going to be generous with my energy. And I find this to be the one area that when you're not conscious of this, there are times when we wake up and we just don't give people this energy. Because again, how we use our voice, how we use this instrument can impact the way others feel. The moment I jumped in this call, it was you and Jim, and the both of you had great energy, and I immediately felt great. Right? Well, was imagine I jumped on and you're like, oh, Vin, it's good.
Podcast.
But imagine, because I've been on podcasts like that before. And again, they're well-intentioned people. They're lovely people. It's just that they're playing the instrument in a way that's not generous, and they're not being generous with their energy. Therefore, I don't feel it.
Yes.
So that's clarity, I think, aids with motivation. And then just adopt the mindset that I want to be generous with my energy. I think that helps me live a more generous and energetic life to those around me. So that anytime I meet with anyone, I know I can give them something, you know, even if it's just energy in the thank you, as opposed, yeah. So that's what I would say. Those two things. I'm not a expert on motivation, I would say. So two thoughts.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. From what I've listened to, I felt pretty motivated after watching some of the videos. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try this. He said I could, I can do it. So thank you for that. But I mean,
my pleasure.
I was looking at your schedule. You are packed. I mean, you're doing virtual. You were doing obviously live for a while there. I'm pretty sure Australia is still on lockdown, right?
Well, I'm lucky. I'm in South Australia. We are the one state that has only been locked down a total of 2 weeks this entire pandemic. So South Australia, Adelaide, we've been kind of getting through it, no dramas. So we've been very lucky, very lucky. We're the one state in Australia that's been able to get through this.
You flew under the radar there. I like it.
Well, we just had this weird bubble here, and it's why I left and came back to Australia. A, because my parents, they're a little bit older, so I want to be close. B, yeah, well, we're a smaller city. We're only 1.8 million people. So smaller city, easier to contain, I guess.
For sure. No, that's, I mean, so it's worked out good, because I would say that you were able to still put your energy out there into the world and give your gift to everyone, which is one of those things I was looking at, and you offer a masterclass, which I am so excited about. And I'm thoroughly going to sign up for. I wanted to like talk to you because I wanted you to kind of like expand upon that. And maybe is there a certain profession? Is there a certain, you know, experience level? Is it for everyone, or could you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yeah. Look, the virtual masterclass is something I've run all through the pandemic simply because I couldn't run my in-person workshops. And so I created a virtual version of that. Unfortunately, from now to the end of the year, I've got 4 more, but it's all sold out. However, that's okay. I created an on-demand version of it because I realized that I used to run these classes 5 days a week, each day 2 hours, a total of 10 hours.
Wow.
And I would have to run them at a certain time. So I used to run them at 6 a.m. in Australia time so I could make it possible for my clients in the US. But then my Australian students were like, no, why do you do it so early? So to me, and then my students in Europe, it was 1 a.m.
Right.
So then I realized that I needed to find a better version so I could scale the impact. So I've now got an on-demand version. It's called the Stage Academy.
Yes.
And it's the same content, except it's on demand so you can learn anytime, wherever you are. And it's essentially a course where if you feel like communication skills is something that you've always wanted to improve, if there's a presentation, you shy away from it. If people ask you to stand up and share a thought, share an idea, share an opinion, and your heart races and you feel like that's letting you down. If you feel like you're brilliant technically, 10 out of 10, but you haven't been able to show people how brilliant you actually are,
yes,
then this is a great course for you to learn the foundations. It teaches you the foundations on how to use your voice. It teaches you the foundations on storytelling, how to be more influential with storytelling. I mean, if you listen back to this conversation we've had, there's been multiple stories shared, right? And that's a great way to communicate, whereas generally people just communicate with facts and figures and stats. The moment you introduce more stories, it's more influential because you're able to move people emotionally. So in the course, I go through foundations of stories, how to tell stories, how to document stories, body language, all of it. So we kind of go through all the foundations. So it's a great foundational course to go through, just to learn the basics. And when you master the basics, you can do amazing things with it.
Then I'm signing up. Because I often feel like I have that, like what you said, is like I feel like I could be a 10, but I'm at a 3.
Yeah.
And I need to figure out how to get my level to that. So that is, because obviously you're in Australia, so I get to watch your keynote. So I feel very lucky for that. But I don't get to see you in person yet for a while. So I want to be able to kind of start this journey. So this is a great way to do it. And I think that any audience that is looking to grow themselves in this capacity, this is a great place to start. So thank you for explaining that. That's fantastic. I'm so glad you offer that. That's amazing. One of the things I've always felt is intention. Your intention produces the outcome for everything you do. And I find your intention beautiful. Like I think it is one of those positive, uplifting, you know, situations that you're giving something to everyone, you know, I don't want to say for free, but like you're giving your knowledge profoundly to everyone. But my question is you're going to be giving the keynote presentation for the ISACA conference Europe in a couple of weeks. And what is your intention for the audience? What do you hope to give them or hope that they achieve or do after they listen to your presentation?
I hope to be able to help them amplify the best parts of who they are. Probably the most succinct thing I've been able to say this entire podcast, but that's what I hope to do, is I hope to help them amplify the best parts of them. And I really believe that as we learn how to improve ourselves personally, that's when we flourish professionally.
Right.
And it's so easy to think of ourselves as the personal self and the professional self. It all starts with the personal self. Once you improve that version of you, every other version of you improves. So that's what I really hope to do, to amplify the audience.
That's wonderful. Thank you. That actually brings me, I know I've taken up an obscene amount of your time and I feel like I could just keep asking you all these questions. I feel very lucky right now that I get to do this, but my very last question for you is, when the show's over and the lights dim and the curtain drops, what do you want to leave behind? What is your legacy to the world?
It's actually really easy. My legacy to the world is my children. I've right now got a 4-year-old baby boy. His name's Xander. Still call him a baby because he is my baby. And I want to have more kids. And to me, that is the greatest legacy I could leave this world. It's not a book. It's not a course I create. It's my children. And I say this because my father said the same thing to me. My father said, the greatest thing I will leave this world is you and your brother.
That's actually really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. That was very personal. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything that you would want to share with the audience that I didn't cover or, you know, let them know, you know, ways to, you know, get in touch with you or to find out other speaking opportunities, anything like that?
Well, if you want to find me on social media, it's very easy. It's just the handle is AskVin, AskVinh. But I guess we'll end with a story. I guess we'll end with something that a lot of people ask me. People ask me the question, Vin, how did you build the speaking career? Vin, how did you become a professional magician? Vin, how did you build the online course? Or the how did you questions? Or how did you do this? Or how did you do that? And there's one, I feel, piece of wisdom that can answer the majority of those questions. And it was when I was in my mid-20s, I was in about $500,000 of debt. It was quite a crappy situation to be in. And I remember sitting in the garage of an investment property of mine, and that's where I had to live for a while. And my dad comes over and he goes, why did you fail? And I look at him and I go, I don't know, Dad, maybe you can tell me. Not in the mood, man. And he goes, you failed because you don't have any soldiers in your army. And I went, what is this, Confucius? Dad, what are you talking about? And he says the most brilliant thing. He goes, son, every time you read a book, the author of that book now stands behind you in an army willing to fight for any battle you call him or her to fight for. Son, after high school, I've seen you recruit maybe 20 soldiers. you lost this battle because you didn't have enough soldiers in your army. And I remember him asking me one question that just made the penny drop for me. He goes, you're running an online business right now. How many online business soldiers do you have? And at the time, I've read about two books on online business. And then it made me learn the lesson that, so maybe I fail at things in life. Maybe I fail. Maybe it's not because I'm not capable, but maybe it's simply because I don't know how. And that was a very empowering moment for me. Because then I started consuming all these books and started building my army. And then I built a successful online business. It wasn't because I was brilliant. It was rather because I had the army behind me. I had the right army composition. And then I kind of took this as a lesson that I apply in my life, in all areas of my life. When I wanted to become a speaker, I literally went online onto Amazon and I purchased 45 books about how to build a keynote speaking career. And I consumed them within a year and I blueprinted the business. And I learned how to build this career path. So to me, whatever it is that you want to do, build your army. Don't fall victim to that easy mindset of thinking, oh, I'm not capable, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. Well, no, you are worthy, you are capable, you are good enough. You just don't know how yet. And you could buy a book for $18 and it'll tell you how. And if you don't like that person's perspective, you want to be, you know, you want to make sure you've got a broad enough perspective, then buy five and it costs you less than $100 and you find out the how.
Wow.
Build your army.
Your dad is like Confucius, because that is something I have actually never heard, but it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I was like, oh my, that's brilliant. I never thought about it like that.
I shared a story there that led to a point that hopefully inspires you and the listeners. Now, the alternative to that is I could have just said, look, read more and it's going to be able to help you achieve more. Just kind of contrast as a listener, which was more impactful? The story was. And if that story moved you and made you feel motivated, think about how you could do that in your own life as well. I mean, sure, take the lesson from that story. That's something that truly has had a deep impact for me. But also see behind the curtain here. As a magician, look behind the curtain. See the underlying mechanics of what's happening on this very podcast. Is that it's stories that move us, not just the content. And that's the last thing I'd like to leave you all with, is just a bit of a peek behind the curtain.
Bin Yang, everyone. That was brilliant. That was.
Oh, thank you for clapping. Thank you.
That was amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Vin will be our keynote speaker for the ISACA Conference Europe. You can still register for the conference at www.isaca.org. You have been listening to an ISACA podcast. Don't forget to subscribe.